The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
The Major Spoilers Podcast covers news, reviews, and of course, spoilers, and goes into details about the topics discussed. So if you haven't read, listened, or watched the items we talk about, you might want to come back later.
I'm Matthew.
I'm Rodrigo.
And I'm Steven, and you're listening to the Major Spoilers Podcast, the podcast for pop culture and comic fans.
In this issue,
is there an echo in here?
Yes, there is. We'll kick off the new year with Matt, Maya, and Mr. Fisk and wrap up the year that was. Rodrigo and Matthew are visiting old friends while Steven hangs out at the corner of Pine and Merrimack, but we're all asking the same question. Who'd win if the Beyonder fought Ric Flair? It's a tough call, but we're up to the challenge, and you're invited to play along because the Major Spoilers Podcast is on the air.
Welcome to issue 1057 of the Major Spoilers Podcast. Thank you so much for downloading and checking us out this week. We'll be taking a look at Daredevil, Parts of a Whole, later in the show. Also this week, the new Echo show kicks off on Disney Plus, so there may be a reason why we're doing that here. But yeah, here we are, and welcome back, everybody. I have discovered that 80s arcades are pretty cool. If you can find a retro arcade in your town, by all means, go to it. One opened up here that they've been working on for good Lord, who knows how long it is. It's old video games, arcade games, and a bar and, you know, bar food type stuff. And the youngest hates going out of the house, but we're like, we're going to go eat lunch at this place. And you're going to with us and you're going to enjoy it. And he ended up enjoying it. Yeah. It was a lot of fun. And I've got a friend from high school who is currently refurbishing a bunch of arcade games so he can open up an 80s arcade. But if you want to go and play yourself, and I, you know, I've got the arcade one-ups machines here, and I've built my own Picade system, and that's really cool. But there's still something about going and everybody playing games together and seeing who can get high scores. The youngest got fifth in Silver Lane Bowling or whatever it is. He's got the fifth spot on that. I took the top spot in Miss Pac-Man. It's fun. The only thing that it was a disappointment was the place that we went to, not my friend from high school's place, they could stand to try to do some refurbishing on those games because sometimes you put the token in and it doesn't take the credit. And a lot of the screens were really, really dim. And and so that was kind of harsh. But if you guys get a chance and you've got them in your areas, go for it. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah, there's some really
downtown.
Go ahead.
That's really wild.
That's okay. We have one downtown here that is really good, and they have a working four-player Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Yeah, we played
four joysticks.
Yeah, we played Ninja Turtles, the four-player of that, and that was fun. My wife was the last turtle standing, and then we played an Avengers four-player one where I played the Vision. It was Vision, Iron Man, Hawkeye,
Captain America,
America. Yep. Those were the four. So yeah, we played those, and then
every once in a while the Wasp would fly through and it'd be Wasp.
Yeah. So yeah, it was fun. So if you guys get a chance, have you been to those, Rodrigo? Do you have any of those? I'm sure you do in Seattle.
Yeah. And there's actually a fair amount of those in Seattle. Like it just really jives with the culture here. Mm-hmm. We went to one where, for example, they had like the old Simpsons arcade game. So my wife and I got to play it. They also had Street Fighter 3 machines. So I got to play that a little bit, and they had, a competitive Pac-Man table.
Oh, cool.
Where four of you sit and each of your Pac-Men is a different color. And instead of like trying to eat ghosts, you're trying to eat each other. And you know, you just kind of waka waka your way around until, you know, you get a pill and then you're it. So everybody has to run away from you. It's pretty fun.
Yeah. Nice. Very nice. Very nice. Well, ladies and gentlemen, I hope that you are ready for an exciting 2024. We're going to kick some things off with some brand new reviews of comics arriving in stores this week. For From Boom Studios, it's Pine and Merrimack number one. This is from Kyle Starks with Fran Galen. I want to ask you guys a question. Is it 100% necessary for the art to match with the vibe of the story that's being told?
Necessary? No, but I feel like it's definitely a plus. I mean, it increases my appreciation of something, because there's a run of Invaders that I love that has really great storytelling, but the art is by Frank Springer and everything is just bizarre to look at.
Yeah. So Frank Galen does some great art in here, except it's very loose and almost cartoony in the way it is. And yet this is it's a detective story. You've got, I forget what her name is. It's like Linnea, I think is how you say her name. She's a former homicide detective, and she met her husband, who's a former MMA fighter, and they ended up getting married and moving to a smaller town where they opened up a detective private detective business at the corner of Pine and Merrimack, and they are on the look for a missing child. And her art is kind of loose and cartoony, so when they get into the barroom brawl that you find in many of these kind of tales, it works, but it's weird work in how it works together. It almost feels a little bit too silly, but it's still really, really good. It's really, really violent. But Kyle Starks, for those of you who don't know, has been working on the
Radiant Black.
Radiant Black. He's been doing that and some other stuff. So I like Carl Starks' writing. And so this is really cool. As I said, it's a story about husband and wife detective team. He's kind of the muscle. She's kind of the brains. And they are looking for a missing child. And that you barely get into the story into issue one. It's basically, let's track down some clues, bust some heads, crack wise, and do some cool things. It's a pretty fun book. I like it a lot. I thought the art was a little distracting in parts, but otherwise I thought it worked. At least the art is consistent from panel to panel, which I really appreciate. Same way with the color scheme. I like that as well. And of course the story is very, very good. So if you're looking for a detective type story, thriller type story, Pine and Merrimack number one is out this week from Boom Studios. And I'm going to give it 3.5 slices of meatloaf. So there you go. Also, let's stay with Boom Studios, Matthew, and see what's going on with the Ranger Academy. Is this the final issue in the miniseries?
I don't believe so, and I'm not sure if Ranger Academy is a miniseries. I think it may be an ongoing. I initially thought it was 6-issue limited, but
okay.
This issue does end on a cliffhanger, which is actually kind of interesting. If you haven't been following Ranger Academy, basically it says, hey, if you're a Power Ranger, you probably had to go somewhere. And so let's pretend that that place was the X-Men or, you know, a Frogwarts kind of things. So essentially, our story has been following 4 of the recruits. Essentially, one of them is, of course, the weirdo, the outsider, the girl who wasn't supposed to be there. And then, of course, we have the standard group of people around her. There's the perfect girl and the weird guy and the crazy guy. But when you break it down, you're actually looking at this story in kind of a Power Rangers universe. And I think that's what's most confusing to me, because they end up on planet Chromia. And Chromia, I swear, is a name that I've heard before in Power Rangers lore, but I can't seem to track it down. But the reason they're on planet Chromia, and this whole episode actually reminds me, Rodrigo has been running a Lancer game for a few months now, secretly behind the things. It reminds me of that, because Chromia is basically this moon with a population of 2, where you can go and be stupid and possibly explode as you try to morph for the first time and find out what color ranger you are.
That's fun.
Yeah. And the whole point of this is, you know, we've seen all of them are wearing their uniforms, but they have hair colors that might lead you to think, hey, this girl with the red hair who seems like the leader, I wonder if she's the Red Ranger. And this clown, the fun kid who's kind of wacky, I wonder if he's the Black Ranger. And so our main character, oh gosh, what is her name? Let's say Ed. No. In any case, the main character that we have been following. Stay with me. I promise you, I'm here. I'm looking right at the comic book and my brain is not working. Sage, thank you. Sage has blue hair. And I'm like, okay, clearly something is going to happen here. And we're going to be like, up, Sage is going to be the Blue Ranger. Blue Rangers, you know, they're the second in command. They're the ones who take over when the Red Ranger is like, hey, I have to go off and do my thing. And now Blue Ranger, you're in charge. So as they all try to morph, they find that it's related to an emotional state. And then we see Sage specifically able to speak to one of the Bandorian monks. Bandorian is also an in-joke, but the monks speak only in word balloons of their particular color. There's a red one, a blue one, a yellow one, a pink one, and a black one. And the five monks are talking to her, and she doesn't understand what's going on. And then she tries to morph. And I'm not saying that blue is not her color. I'm just saying that it's kind of a shocking moment, because if you know anything about Green Rangers historically, you'll also know that maybe more is up with Sage than we think. So here's the thing, and this I think is a big caveat. If you're not really steeped in Power Rangers lore, this really just feels like Percy Jackson with a different hat. Or to some degree, you know, it feels like those arcs of X-Men where we're heavily into the school aspect of it. Kitty Pryde is here and hopes she survives the experience. If you have been following Boom's Power Rangers, or if you're somebody who's kind of into Power Rangers or Super Sentai, it kind of steps above that. But it also does it in such a way that sometimes it feels like homework. So I'm not sure whether you'll be happier if you come in really, really steeped in the lore, or if you come in just blind and you're like, hey, cool, Hermione has red hair now and she's a Power Ranger. But I will say this, 3.5 slices of meatloaf for Ranger Academy number 4. A whole half star of that is for the surprising moment at the end, because it did catch me off guard. I did not expect any of that to happen, but definitely I will be back for, and I think it is an ongoing. I'm not sure if it changed from a limited to an ongoing, but I will be back for at least the rest of the first arc just to see how this all shakes down and what it means.
All right. Very cool. Rodrigo, I've been meaning to ask if you have been reading the Gargoyle series, since you're a huge fan of the Disney afternoon show. And we are already up to issue number 11. And so you're taking a look at it this week from Dynamite Entertainment.
Yeah, I have been not keeping up very well, just because I'm very bad at keeping up with comics. It's really gotten to the point where, like, most of my entertainment, like some sort of small electronic creature, is like, hey, a new episode of that thing you like is out, but like I don't have anything like that for comics, so I keep forgetting to go find comics. One of the fundamental problems that comics is facing right now, especially as platforms decline. So I'm trying to catch up. This latest issue it's definitely a Gargoyles issue. Here we have Brooklyn, Broadway, and Lexington together again. Along with Lexington's son, I think. This is very much a middle story comic. You kind of see what the main antagonist is up to. You see that, like, there's a lot of exposition, because, for example, Renard is going to die. You know, finally he's been like an absolutely ancient man, but not like magical ancient like your Macbeths. He's trying to figure out, they're trying to figure out where his fortune is going to go. And the the twist there is kind of interesting. So you're seeing that, you're seeing what the bad guy's up to, but nothing is really resolved in this issue. We're clearly leading to a big climax for all these characters, both like fighty and emotional, right? You see Elisa get chewed out for not telling people about the gargoyles now that it's basically become public knowledge. But again, you see that it's leading somewhere. It's okay. You know, it's like, it's not a super exciting issue. It's a somewhat confusing issue to jump into because the bad guys are all wearing gargoyle masks and not like generic gargoyle masks, but the bad guys are wearing, like, this guy is wearing a like Hudson mask, and this guy is wearing an Angela mask, and this guy is wearing a Goliath mask. So, you know, there are panels where I'm looking at it and I'm like, okay, brain, I don't like you and you don't like me, but you have to help me figure out who's punching who in this panel.
Yeah.
And then it's like, okay, I see like a tie. So this is like one of the mobsters wearing a Brooklyn mask and not, you know, the other way around or whatever. So that gets a little confusing. But it's fun. It's a gargoyles book, you know, like the Dracons are involved. Glasses is there. You see both Owen and Vogel in the same room, which is always a treat. So it's, yeah, you know, it's a gargoyles thing. I like it. It's good times.
Go ahead.
Oh, I'll give it 3.5 slices of meatloaf. It's, you know, it's perfectly fine.
Yeah, it is in continuity because Greg Wiseman is the writer of this, as he was with the original animated series. So everything you're reading is just the continuation of the animated series.
Yeah, and it's just so smart for Disney to let him do this because he's basically just writing the eventual show that they might put on Disney Plus. You know, like one way or another, even if they don't do it. Like they just have that available.
Yeah, I think that's pretty cool. All right, there you go, ladies and gentlemen. And if you want to pick up any of these books, because they're all fine books, we have links in the show notes that will take you to our Amazon affiliate link. And in the Amazon affiliate link, of course, you can buy the comics digitally, read them on your favorite e-device, and then a little bit comes back our way and keeps this show going week after week, month after month. And also, we have a Patreon at patreon.com/majorspoilers. And this is the part where we give some shout outs to some very cool people. This week, we're sending our shout outs to HEC487, HEC487, our newest associate producer, and to Frack, who is our newest silver member. So thank you so much, HEC487 and Frack. We appreciate everything that you've done to support us and welcome aboard to our Patreon feed, where you get access to the Major Spoilers podcast pre-show, where we talk a little bit about Twilight Imperium this week, and a bunch of other things. So you can check that out and find out more and see all the extras that you get when you head over to patreon.com/majorspoilers. All right. He was a guy who could not see. She was a woman that could not hear, and when they got together, it was murder. Daredevil, Parts of a Whole, by David Mack and Joe Quesada over at Marvel Comics. This was quite a few years ago. This is the first appearance. Yeah, the trade was released. The series came out in 98. The trade was not released until... the trade wasn't released until 2015. Mm-hmm. So... Echo has been around. This is her introduction to the Marvel Universe. Also, this week on Disney Plus, Echo debuts. I think it's the third or the fourth, something like that. But it's going to be a
Thursdays. I think is like Disney Plus new episode.
Okay, all right. So and it's not a very long series. I think they're releasing the first three, and then there's only 5 episodes in the series, and they're going to play the whole series the entire month of January. So by the end of the month, you will have caught up because January is a 5th week this year. And so you're going to get all of the good stuff. But this is the story of how they met. And just as a broad general sense of this story, this feels like when Matt Murdock and Elektra first met. I don't know if I'm thinking of the Frank Miller story, Elektra Assassin, or what, but I just get a lot of vibes of these two are very much in the same kind of vein as far as the overall theme of the story goes. Did you guys get that or no?
I think yes, and I think the reason you did that is because the 2003 Daredevil movie cribs some of this and attaches it to Matt's relationship with Elektra. Specifically, some of the meet cute moments and the part where he, you know, lights his symbol on fire.
Also, this is very much trying to do a Miller, like, first person narration for a lot of the time. So that itself probably feels familiar too.
Yeah.
The introduction of the, I'm going to coin a term, the murder pixie dream girl is something that keeps cropping up for Daredevil. And so I feel like Elektra did it after the Black Widow. And I think Elektra did it better than the Black Widow, but I definitely agree with you. There are big echoes of Elektra here. And honestly, Elektra was, you know, 20 years in the past when this book came out. So having it be just almost a straightforward retelling wouldn't even be a bad thing. But
yeah,
I feel like what they did kind of frustrates me because it really does hit a lot of those same notes in a lot of those same ways.
Mm-hmm.
And of course they have a fight on a seesaw.
I think the thing that is going to be most interesting to see what they do in the Echo series is they kind of did. So this is the thing that's frustrating is after you read parts of a whole, you realize that the whole Echo storyline is in the Hawkeye Christmas special from the Christmas series from what last year, 2021 or 2022.
It was 2021.
Yeah, it is. Her whole story is there, including the part where she realizes, oh, I've been used by Wilson Fisk, and she goes and shoots him in an alley. And it's like, oh, okay, so what is Echo going to go? Where is it going to go from here when they've already used up all the quote unquote cool bits in a totally different show that didn't feature Daredevil? So that's going to be interesting to see how that plays out.
Yeah. Is there a lot more Echo out there to read? Like when I first encountered this character in the Disney Plus stuff, I thought that I remembered the character, but I was actually conflating it with a completely different character. So I don't know that I've ever read anything else that has Echo in it.
Echo's, honestly, there's this arc, and then she pops up again briefly, and then she doesn't really show up again until New Avengers, at which point she becomes an Avenger, actually kind of by accident, because they were trying to have Daredevil sneakily be Ronin under the mask, and then they couldn't get the rights to do that. And so Maya Lopez Echo turned out to be wearing the Ronin suit and pretending to be Daredevil. And then the last thing I remember seeing her in, she is the last bearer of the Phoenix Force during Jason Aaron's run of Avengers, maybe 6 months ago, a year ago.
But yeah, I'm trying to see where her last appearance is. I mean, she's in a lot of stuff. But there's just not. Oh yeah, the last 2021 Heroes Reborn, 1-7. It looks like was the last time that she was there.
I mean, yeah, that would be like the tail end of the Daredevil, not the Daredevil, the Avengers stuff, Avengers Volume 8. And then I want to say when the TV series came out, they did, like, earlier this year or late last year, they did a 6-issue limited with, like, Phil Noto art, but I didn't actually read it, so.
Yeah, Daredevil, you got to appreciate Daredevil and Iron Fist, like, the comics, for just, like, constantly filling up the Marvel Universe with, like, pretty cool street-level characters, right? So then that way when you get somebody in that wants to do like a big street epic or something like you know, the capital cities of heaven or whatever. It's like you could just bring a whole bunch of these, like, street level characters that don't get much play or whatever. And it's like, oh no, so this person has to fight Echo now in this context. That's difficult, you know?
Yeah, no. And so that's why, you know, with the gang war story arc that's going on right now, it would be great to see her pop up, right? Because it is all these street level things where they're trying to deal with, I don't know, nonsense stuff.
Yeah, basically the kingpin has been deposed and all of the minor guys are fighting for turf.
Yeah. And so this would be a good time for...
The Owl, Diamondback, Black Mariah, the Enforcers, Mr. Negative, all of those schmucks.
If all of those jerks are there, I might actually have to look into this. I love the Kingpin's, like, terrible, like I love all his terrible lackeys that have more visual personality than he does. Because they're actual supervillains, basically.
Yeah.
Yeah. Dr. Octopus and the Owl, I think, were in this briefly, but the Owl, I think, is still in play. The last issue that I read, the Spider-Woman crossover, several people have already been knocked out of the gang war. Big Ben, who fought Luke Cage once back in 1972, sadly did not make it to round two.
Yeah. Anyway, back to Parts of a Whole. Daredevil is doing Daredevil things. Wilson Fisk apparently knows that Matt Murdock is the Daredevil at this point. And so he convinces Maya, who, again, can't hear, but she can mimic anything that she sees or feels or whatever. And he convinces her that the Daredevil killed her dad like 50 years ago. Not 50 years ago, but it's been a long time. And coincidentally, Maya and Matt Murdock meet in their civilian form, and they quickly start having the hots for one another until they finally realize, oh no, you're the Daredevil, and oh no, you're the Echo, and now we must fight to the death until Maya figures out that, oh no, I've been played this entire time. There's some good fight scenes in here. I do like the issue where, and it's, I don't know if it's because they had to get a guest artist in for it. This would be issue 12 of Daredevil. Where they've got a whole different artist in here, but it's these two are fighting through the Hell's Kitchen, but we're seeing all of these other side stories of just ordinary citizens and how this fight impacts and changes their lives. Like, one guy is going to commit suicide, but this other guy that was going to kill somebody gets knocked off a building by their fight and lands on top of the car. The guy doesn't decide to kill himself, but at the same time, a flyer flies through and, it's a wanted poster for this guy that just fell on the hood of his car for $200,000, which gets him out of his money woes. And good thing he has a gun and a phone so he can call the police and collect the reward. And, you know, there's those kinds of things. So that was an interesting story, just kind of a breakout. And I think it's, I don't know, it feels like it's because Joe Quesada was not available to do art. So we need to do something else for this issue.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, it also stands out for me because Rob Haynes, who did that issue, is really good.
Yeah.
And it's absolutely, it's like the polar opposite of Quesada. It's slick and it's
very simple.
The colors are done very flat, a very simple line, but also
it would be
a disturbingly simple line.
I would say it is similar to what we see. It's something that we see sometimes in books from Image Comics. Like, it reminds me of Ice Cream Man as far as the art goes in that particular issue.
Yeah, I could see that. It's not quite as like clean as a Dan Mora or a who's the guy who did all this stuff with Mark Waid? Doc Shaner, the other guy who has a similar art style, but it's really, really graphic and really dark lines. And I don't know. Anyway, it reminds me a little bit of that, only with a lighter edge and a completely different color palette. And I'm going to be frank with you, but I'll be earnest if you'd rather, is the only issue in this run, in this collection, that I can stand to look at. It is the only issue that is not just a grotesquerie to me. Because Maya Lopez, throughout this book, we hearing, you know, Matt talk about, oh, she's pretty. And I'm like, she looks like Bugs Bunny if he had the mumps.
Yeah, but he's blind.
I understand that he's blind. And I'm just like, I don't know.
I don't know. It feels very much like a 90s. It is a very 90s art style. This is very typical
very
what you would
early
find.
90s art style.
Yeah, no, but this is something that I would see in. This is a style that we saw in a bunch of DC comics, like Nightwing had this style. And.
But again, that's early 90s.
Yeah.
That's like 94, 95. This is late 90s. It's all like a completely different universe.
No, it's the 90s. It's all in the 90s. So it to me, it feels of that time period. And I wasn't necessarily put off by it. Mainly because number one, it's consistent. And number two, it just feels it has that vibe throughout. And so that's why when you get to the issue that is with a different artist, you're like, ah, this is a different story that they're telling. And there's a good reason why you have to switch the art out here. And so it made visual sense to me. Rodrigo, did you not like the art or did you like the art or are you indifferent?
I ended up liking it because at first I didn't really like it. I think that it's you know, it's a little bit, and I think it's a little bit ugly, and I think it's like ugly on purpose. Especially like some characters just look absolutely terrible. But again, I think that's on purpose. What ended up bringing it around for me is that there are bits of this that are sort of like expressionistic. Are just like, here is what this character is experiencing while they're like playing the piano and stuff. And it's like, you don't see them in a room. You see like swirling images and like weird text and stuff like that. It's like very like, it has like kind of this like late 80s Vertigo kind of thing going on. I don't think anybody would look at it and confuse it that way, but it seems like an extrapolation from that, a like somebody looking at that and doing it in their own style. So I enjoyed that, and unfortunately you see that less and less and less as the book goes on.
Yeah,
and it's sort of like the plot becomes more important than the character's feelings or introducing you to how the characters see the world. So that tends to go away almost completely by the end.
Yeah, that's the one thing that I really got a kick out of, and one of the disappointments that I had in reading this in a digital format is that I'm only seeing it page to page. Now, of course, I could turn my iPad sideways, but it's really cool because you get like what feels like a double page spread of Daredevil telling his story in this particular style, and then you turn the page and suddenly you've got Echo telling her side of the story or telling her story, and it's, you know, different style, different theme. And it just works really, really well when you see those two flipping back and forth between the viewpoint of the story, which I really got a kick out of. But they didn't continue to do it throughout the entire book, which was disappointing. And also the parts, like you were mentioning, Rodrigo, where you're into Maya's world and everything is crayons and colored pencils. That's also something that doesn't run throughout the entire issue or the entire series. And I don't know, I also felt kind of let down by that they couldn't keep it up.
Yeah.
And I don't know if that is the failure of writing or a failure of art, because I don't know if Joe Quesada is a fast artist or if he's one of those Jim Lee types where he is slow. So, yeah, you run into these Jim Lee things where you get like, you know, he's only able to do one out of six issues or something like that. So I don't know if it was the writer having to say, okay, well, we need to do this in order to make sure he stays on pace or anything like that. But that was the kind of the letdown.
By the time we get to issue 15, Quesada is essentially absent from pencils. If you look at those last couple of issues, it's mostly David Ross. And he's doing something that evokes what was happening at the beginning, but he's also a completely different style of artist.
Yeah.
And I feel like he's trying to ape what a Quesada would have done, but it's also not his deal. You know, it's not his style. It's like stylistically, he's trying to ape somebody else.
And that's just classic, like big two stuff, right? Where, like, at best, you're going to get a second or third artist. And again, your best, like the best possible option, this artist is like aware and trying to maintain the themes of the piece that were started by a different artist, but it's still not the same artist. So it's going to look different. And if you try to look at this thing as a whole, you lose those themes, right? If you're looking at it as a complete piece, you're like, what is it saying? And it sort of stops saying something halfway through.
Or it starts saying something a little different.
Something else.
That's not necessarily a bad thing, especially, you know, if we're if we're trying to take this as a real consistent 6-issue arc. But I also feel like it isn't a real consistent 6-issue arc. And I feel like it's kind of, I feel like they're really playing by the seat of their pants, and nothing wrong with that. I mean, some of the best comics that I've ever read were just written on the fly. You know, I don't think Steve Gerber probably sat down and wrote a detailed outline in his life, but he also had really good instincts on how to throw a comic book together. So I feel like my biggest complaint, and this is my complaint with a lot of post-Frank Miller Daredevil, is it doesn't feel like it's exactly Miller, but it's never not Miller. Absolutely. And that, I think, is the frustrating part. You know, if you've ever, I don't know if you guys know this, but Hell's Kitchen, the neighborhood of Hell's Kitchen, really doesn't exist in the way that the comics show it anymore. It's actually the Clinton neighborhood. It's very heavily gentrified.
Oh yeah, it's like been gentrified for a
beautiful
long time.
It's like a high, rent neighborhood. And so, you know, first of all, they're dealing with the 1980s. So they're trying to give us this filthy 42nd Street that doesn't exist anymore. But there's also just a real vibe here. And I think Stephen called it at the very beginning of, we're going to make Fetch happen again. And we're going to do Echo, and Echo is totally not Elektra, you guys. But
yes, what is going on with Elektra at this time? Elektra. Is she disappeared? Because I know there was that Frank Miller assassin run in 86,
right?
But I don't know what happened after that with Elektra. If she was just a recurring in the Daredevil series, or if she is out of the picture, because it's very weird that you introduce a character that fills the same role that Elektra does in this series.
Well, Elektra in 98 had actually transitioned over. She had her own ongoing with Mike Deodato art, and they were playing her as a straightforward superhero. They were having Elektra hang around and be one of the street-level guys with your Shang-Chi's and your Power Mans and your Iron Fists. Literally, I think Shang-Chi and Power Man and Iron Fist all, you know, tried to punch her. But at that point in time, if you'll recall, during the events of Marvel versus DC, she was also, for some reason, one of Marvel's popular characters, because she had that big fight with Catwoman. And she ended up being one of the characters in the big amalgam book where, for some reason, Catwoman and Daredevil and Elektra were somehow amalgamated into two women with three eyes between them. But so, yeah, at this point, they had made Elektra a straightforward hero. So maybe they were trying to have somebody who was still the, you know, the evil girl who tempts the hero with her evilness.
Yeah. Now that I'm thinking, now that I'm looking at it, this series is a Marvel Knights imprint. And so what was going on at this time was Marvel Comics had just filed Chapter 11 bankruptcy. And so what they did was they contracted out Black Panther, Punisher, Daredevil, and Inhumans to Quesada and Jimmy Palmiotti's Event Comics. So if Elektra was doing her own thing in Marvel, that might explain why we don't see that here, and that these guys are just doing whatever they're doing with this series.
Interesting.
Yeah. I don't know. It really does feel, again, it does feel like we're trying to get an Elektra Daredevil story here, Frank Miller story here, including, as Rodrigo said, a lot, you know, most of the first two or three issues are inner monologue type stuff, which I don't mind. I rather kind of dig it. Sure. And you can see, as Rodrigo said, echoes of this story in both the Daredevil Netflix series, as well as the Hawkeye series. So I guess I'm kind of interested to see this Echo series this week to see, well, what are they going to do now? Because as far as origin stories go, they've already kind of used up all the good stuff from this book. And so there are other Echo appearances. So either they're going to be inspired by that, or they're going to go off in a completely different direction.
I mean,
I expect it's going to be a completely different direction, because everything that she does in the comic after she resolves her whole arc of Kingpin told me Daredevil was a bad guy is really tied up in other people's stories. And after, you know, this arc and after we wrap this up, she kind of becomes like what I refer to as the team book character, like your Vision. Yeah, never see the Vision in a solo book. Always in a team book, always going like, yes, Marvel Man is right. So I think they almost have to do something new, because everything she's done after that is all tied up in various crossovers, or, hey, here's a new launch of Avengers, or another new launch of Avengers, or another launch of Avengers.
What did you think of this series overall as a whole, Rodrigo?
I thought it was okay. Again, I'm reading through it and it's like, it's incredibly wordy, right? And yeah. I'm trying to be like, okay, they're going for something. They're trying to, you know, they're doing a Frank Miller who was doing a like hard-boiled detective like thing, right? So that's what they're trying to do. They're trying to get us into these characters' heads. But I thought at some points it was just, there was just too much text, especially when we get into the Kingpin's head. Mm-hmm. And then it's just like walls of text. And
can I
it's
just
like,
say that I do not ever need to see a Freudian excuse of I was a poor little fat guy and that's why I murder people?
Yeah. Because,
oh, God.
Hey, let me absolutely trampoline off of that into something that is very active in this book. And here's a segment called Ableism.
Yeah.
Ableism in 1990s comics, I guess. It's really a thing, right? So Daredevil already kind of has some issues with that, in that he kind of exists in like this quantum uncertainty state of like, he's a very capable blind man, but also his powers make it so that he's not actually really blind. Like, he's someone who can see a person basically through sonar. It depends on how they're writing it. He's someone who can read a paper, like a piece of paper, because he can feel the ink indentation, right? So he doesn't need to read Braille. He can just read. So it's like, a lot of the time it's like, well, does Daredevil even count as being blind, because he has all these things to mitigate it? Like, when Echo comes in, that stuff seems even worse, because Echo's deaf, and they are like, she has this ability to copy anything physical that she can see, and that's why she doesn't speak with the same sort of affectation that a lot of deaf and hard of hearing Americans have, right? Which, that in itself seems like, well, here's this pretty lady, we don't want to have her talking weird, so here's this like mechanical, like Marvel Comics magic reason as to why she doesn't sound like that. At which point they introduce someone who does sound like that. They look like an absolute monster, and they make a huge point of being like, this guy is bald and has hemorrhoids.
Uh-huh. And I'm pretty sure, like, they use the R word several times in this.
Do they?
Oh yeah,
I think so. Yes,
at least twice.
Okay.
I'm almost certain of it.
That, I do not know when that flipped. So in the 90s, it might have actually still been okay to put that in a comic.
Oh, yeah. I want to say it wasn't until the 2010s before people really said, hey, this is probably stuff we shouldn't be doing.
Yeah. This has now become a slur. Let's stop saying it.
Yeah.
Right.
But yeah, so we meet two deaf characters. One of them, they make a point, like this beautiful lady who is super talented and can play music even though she's deaf, which, you know, I know deaf people can't play music even though they're deaf. But again, just removing all of the things that make being deaf a challenge, you know, being or whatever. Like, she basically suffers from none of it. And then they introduce this other character.
He's not deaf, though. He's just talks that way when he's nervous.
No, he is deaf.
One of the twins?
Yeah. That's why he talks that way.
No, because at the end, where after he kills Fisk, he talks normal, and he's like, what's that? He goes, I told you that's what happens when I'm nervous. I talk that way. I don't think that guy's deaf.
I'm pretty sure that guy's supposed to be deaf.
Well, in any case, they play him off with the R word a couple of times.
Well, yeah. they shoot him in the head. And then it's funny because we were introduced to another character, but it's his twin brother. And they're so identical that he is also, in fact, bald and uses hemorrhoid cream. I don't know. It's like a lot of this was and also once you get into like the Kingpin stuff. And, you know, being fat and having a learning disability or whatever. Mm-hmm, and it's like, and that's why I became a criminal. And even then, it's like, you might have been able to play this inspirationally and be like, despite all that, I became a master criminal. You know, and it's like, that would have almost been better. Because then, you know, you don't have to squeeze the Kingpin into like, our morality. Yeah. He can be an amoral character that you're still like impressed by and interested in. But yeah, this whole thing to me seemed very much like very similar to how Daredevil circumvents the problems of being blind, Echo circumvents the problems of being deaf, but the excuse is less there because this book was written 20 years after Daredevil was first introduced? So, you know, it's like people can research this. Even in the 90s, people could have like talked to some deaf people or made some calls or whatever, or watched some documentaries. Like, you know, in the 90s, like we already had cochlear implants, and there's always been like this big controversy in the deaf community about cochlear implants. So it's like, I know this because even though I'm not deaf and nobody in my family is deaf, like just through osmosis, like in the culture, you encounter deaf people and you see the issues that deaf people face. But this was not that. This was just like, what if Daredevil fought a guy who couldn't smell, right? Like this is what they're doing here, rather than like, hey, what if there legit was a deaf character, which is what makes me hopeful about this Echo series. Like, when Disney wants to, they can do some really good research and really touch on like important cultural things or important challenging things. And then Coco makes me cry. So, so I'm hopeful that maybe this Echo series is going to be approached as like, yeah, what if you this like action character who's deaf?
In Hawkeye, I thought they treated the character fair because they use sign language.
I thought so too. Yeah.
And they dealt with her Native American heritage, I thought, fine, right?
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I think they probably will do fine with that. If anything, Disney does seem to be willing to hire, what are they called? Sensitivity consultants or whatever. Yeah. To come in and look at some of these things. So, I mean, that's good. I have high hopes for, this series. Otherwise, we wouldn't be talking about Echo on the show. I thought that this was, I thought this was okay. I enjoyed it for what it was, although I feel like if you read it the first time, you probably were like, oh, yeah, this is pretty cool stuff. But, you know, 20, 30 years later, you're looking at this and going, oh, they've already picked apart this carcass. There's nothing left from book to use anymore because you've already done it all. So, yeah, I want to see, you know, and again, I haven't read all the other Echo stuff, so I don't know what they might be going for next. But if you're wanting to know what happened to the Kingpin at the end of Hawkeye, I think they answered it in this book. So I thought this was fine. It's a very 90s book. So go into it with that. If you like Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure and you're okay with them, you're using a slur over and over. And it's just like, well, that was the time period. It's going to be the same way when you read this book. Not that's an excuse or, you know, that you should give it a pass because of that, but it definitely was a different time when a lot of this stuff was written. But, you know, it's definitely a check it out. But I'm going to say if you've already seen Hawkeye or the Daredevil television series, there's nothing new in this book that's a takeaway. You've already seen all, like I said, the best parts. Matthew, what about you?
Well, three caveats. First, I do disagree with Steven in that the 90s are all the same. And the late 90s, especially at Marvel, has a tone that I never liked, never got into, do not like. Second, Daredevil is a very difficult character for me to get into simply because so many of his stories and so many of the writers and fans are about, okay, you know this superhero? He's totally not a superhero, and we're going to take everything you know about a superhero and throw it out the window. But he's still going to wear a red costume with a chest emblem and boots. And third, this art is not to my liking. I'm, you know, I don't want to be the guy who's like, let's go, I can't draw. But I did not care for 90s Quesada. And this is some of the worst of 90s Quesada for me, where, I mean, if you honestly go and you honestly sit and look at Foggy Nelson in here, he looks like a wacky waving inflatable arm flailing tube man with like a big shock of hair, like an anime character. So I didn't like this book when it came out. It was a big, expensive, popular comic. I was working in a comic store when this came out. And I did spend a year or two, you know, biting my tongue and going, oh, yeah, I've heard good things about that Daredevil run. You should totally buy it. So on those grounds, I think that I can't say anything without incriminating myself. But I did not care for this volume. And I feel like, you know, the best part of it is, you know, that issue with the guest artist and the focus on other stuff. That really is an example of what would have made this stand out.
All right, there you go. That wraps it up for this issue. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for checking us out. If you found value in the show, of course, we would love for you to join us on our Patreon page, where you can find even more fun, including the Major Spoilers Podcast pre-show, and, of course, the Major Spoilers VIP chat for December 2023, which is free for everybody. You can go in and take a listen to that to hear what's going on behind the scenes. And then, of course, you're going to be so moved that you will want to join us. The one that I will suggest that you sign up for is the $5 a month, the Silver Level membership. That's where you're going to get your best value, your best bang for your buck. You can find out more information and sign up today at patreon.com/majorspoilers. What did you think of Daredevil Parts of the Whole? Head over to our Discord server. Let us know what you thought. Everybody's going to share their thoughts and opinions. It's going to be a good time. Lots of good people over in our Discord. So until next week, when we're going to be taking a look at Tintin, Land of Black Gold, remember, we know that you love comics and we do too. And we will talk with you soon.
Fat Dick's Ray Vision of Superman. I could save a few bucks and stand around and read through the covers of the comics on the stand. But although every other page would be backwards, I suppose, I could still read the evens and the odds. Well, I don't know. Guess I haven't thought this all the way through. Plus, as soon as the comic book store guy knew, they kicked my butt out on the corner. What a major spoiler. What a major spoiler. What do you think about it? that way. If I was Hulk in green or gray, I could just bust through that brick wall, take their comic books away. But then the little meat would deal with all the tanks and bombs and guns. Have you ever tried to read a series with all that going on? Guess I need to rethink this plan. How would I back and board my comics with such huge hands? Guess I already told ya what a major spoiler. What a major spoiler. Yeah, yeah, yeah. What a major spoiler. What a major spoiler. Start raving, rich like a man of iron. Might not be surprised if I'm that I might actually have the heart cold to follow an entire storyline. Would I really even need to read up on all those escapades? I mean, who needs such distractions when your sister's such a babe? But the downside is such a beast. Being shot up in a fun, being the Middle East with a king, son, throwing soldier. What a major spoiler. What a major spoiler. Yeah, yeah, yeah. What a major spoiler, whoa, 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 whoa. What a major spoiler.
Major Spoilers Podcast, copyright 2009.
Major Spoilers Podcast, copyright 2010.
Major Spoilers is copyright 2011. Major Spoilers is copyright 2012.
Major Spoilers is copyright 2013.
Major Spoilers is copyright 2014.
This podcast is copyright 2015 by Major Spoilers Entertainment, LLC.
This podcast is copyright 2016 by Major Spoilers Entertainment, LLC.
This podcast is copyright 2017 by Major Spoilers Entertainment, LLC.
This podcast is copyright 2018 by Major Spoilers Entertainment, LLC.
This podcast is copyright 2019 by Major Spoilers Entertainment, LLC.
This podcast is copyright 2020 by Major Spoilers Entertainment, LLC.
This podcast is copyright 2021 by Major Spoilers Entertainment, LLC.
This podcast is copyright 2022 by Major Spoilers Entertainment, LLC.
This podcast is copyright 2023 by Major Spoilers Entertainment, LLC.
This podcast is copyright 2024 by Major Spoilers Entertainment, LLC.